The James Wiseman trade is official, and we have Lockdown Warriors host Cyrus to join us and talk to us about James Wiseman, what we need to know in today's episode of the Lockdown Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. And today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. So today's going to be a really fun episode. We're going to start off talking with Lockdown Warriors host Cyrus. He's going to tell us about James Wiseman. Then we're going to move into the second segment, and we're going to talk to Lockdown Cavs host Evan, and he's going to tell us how you can possibly make a two big man lineup work. And then the final segment, we're going to talk about Sadiq Bey and why the Pistons decided to move on from him. But without further ado, let's get into some James Wiseman talk. We're here with Cyrus of Lockdown Warriors.
Appreciate I don't have a last Cyrus. Name, Koo. I'm just Cyrus. So,
I didn't want. So look, just to be completely frank about it, I forgot to ask Cyrus how to pronounce his name before we started recording. I was like, you know what? I'd rather not say his last name and butcher it and disrespect him.
It's such an easy name, Koo. I don't understand what the struggle is, man. It's all, I'm kidding. It's like the hardest. I'm literally like the only person beside my dad in this entire country and maybe world with that last name. So no, it's all good. It's Sotsa's. I was on The Price is Right many years ago watching Rod Roddy, rest in peace, try to pronounce my last name. It was pure comedy, but great to be on with you, brother.
Oh, that's a super cool detail. I didn't know nothing about that. That's dope. but all right, let's get into some James Wiseman talk. So me and Cyrus were talking a little bit before we started recording, and I said, you know, I'm going to ask you some stuff about James Wiseman, but it doesn't seem like a lot of people seem to have a lot of answers when it comes to James Wiseman because he only has played. He's been in the league for 3 years, only played 60 games. He's yet to play a full regular season of games. So I don't know how much you're going to be able to answer for, but I guess we'll start off here. And I wanted to ask you, so I've seen Bob Myers and Steve Kerr. They came out today. We're recording this on the 13th. They came out today and talked about the trade and how complicated everything was. I'm sure you understand like how just annoying that whole process was. But I want to talk about something Steve Kerr said. Today, Steve Kerr said, quote, "I was all in on drafting James Wiseman. When we did, I was part of the group, loved the ability, loved everything that we saw." And he went on to say that he felt like he just wasn't able to give Wiseman the runway he needed to make it to where he needs to go. Do you back up that statement? Do you think that's a true statement? And why didn't James Wiseman crack the rotation with the Warriors? Why didn't he get the runway?
Well, what part of that coup would you think isn't true? I'm curious why you're asking that.
I didn't watch him as much. Is it because he didn't play well? Is it because he got hurt? Is it because he was young? I know you guys were obviously championship contenders. He couldn't, you know, if it was just because it was hard rotation to crack. I know Bob Myers went on to say that a little bit today too. Which of it do you think was it more of? Him being young, hard rotation, injuries, raw? What was it?
I think, this season has been like if you're a member of Dub Nation, if you've been watching Locked On Warriors all year, you've been seeing me complain a lot about Steve Kerr. This is far and beyond his worst season ever as a head coach. He's been perplexing. He's been nonsensical. And that line you just read me, I actually did not hear that, but I knew it. So, but because a lot of people are out there saying, well, Kerr's the coach. He's not the GM. So he wasn't responsible for drafting James Wiseman. But as you just read, he was involved. And anyone who actually covers this team knows Steve Kerr is very involved and is a massive part of the personnel decisions. He might not be the final say, but they're not making decisions without him being involved in the process. So, yes, it's he was part of it. And now, 3 years later, you have to, or two and a half, whatever it is, you have to raise the question, why did you draft him in the first place when you knew full well he was a project? You knew full well that you were a team still pursuing championships. I have no idea why they decided to go ahead and trade for him if they had no intention of actually giving him the run that he needs to be successful. And, you know, the 60 regular season games, you know, he only played three college games. He, you know, even in high school, he wasn't like, he was kind of a late bloomer. He wasn't playing since he was really young. This is a player who is raw. And, you know, that's the one question. And I wish Kerr, I guess, would be a little more forthright in terms of why did you give the green light for this pick if you had no patience for it? He's blamed injuries. I get it. That's a part of it. You know, Bob Myers said something some weeks back as well, insinuating that Wiseman's injuries were just really poorly timed. He got hurt right when they wanted to give him run. But he's also been healthy this year. I mean, with the exception of the sprained ankle a month and a half ago, which kept him out for over a month, and it was a really minor sprained ankle. That's when you really knew Wiseman's days were done. He's been healthy this year, but the team is not playing him. You know, he got run on Christmas Day against the Grizzlies in a game that was like really a statement game for both the Warriors and Grizzlies. The Warriors won that game. I thought Wiseman played great. I thought he was adapting in terms of being a player that focused less on offense and more on defense and rebounding, which is what the team desperately needed out of him. But for whatever reason, Kerr didn't like him. And what I object to with Kerr this year strongly is that Kerr kept deciding to play like Anthony Lamb, a two-way player, more minutes than Wiseman. He's giving Ty Jerome, I know they play different positions, but another two-way player who's a point guard. He's playing three point guard rotations and benching guys like Wiseman and some of the other younger players the Warriors have. Steve Kerr this year is wild, man. I don't know what to say about his coaching this year, but if I take anything out of Wiseman with the Warriors, it's this. You can't blame him for what happened. Kerr, for whatever reason, just gave up on him. Kerr has never been known as a coach that develops players. It's not like he has like a lucrative, rich history of developing young talent. He inherited a phenomenal team and took them to the championship. He inherited a dynasty, basically, even though they hadn't won championships yet. But when it comes to developing players, he does not have a track record of it. So if you're a Pistons fan, there is reason to have hope and optimism. Like, I wouldn't look at him as like damaged goods. I wouldn't look at him as just baggage that the Warriors wanted to ditch. He still might be a great player. His time with the Warriors indicated nothing except that Steve Kerr just had no patience for him. And Steve Kerr doesn't even like centers. I mean, the tallest player in the Warriors is Kevon Looney at 6'9". I don't understand what Kerr's doing. But if you're a Pistons fan, there's hope. I will give you that. And hope I answered your question.
So you actually said some things there that I was going to ask you about. So I'll ask it still, but you gave some context to it. So when the trade happened, I just want to give you some context of how Pistons fans reacted.
Yeah.
When the trade happened, Pistons fans were very upset. They loved Sadiq Bey. He was a fan favorite for a lot of people. I wasn't the biggest fan of his, but Pistons fans were upset. And they thought, oh, is it just James Wiseman? Or are they going to be able to get like Moses Moody or something, whatever, whatever. And when they found out it was just James Wiseman, they were like, oh no, he's been a bust, blah, blah. Like, why'd we give up Sadiq for a guy who can't even play? Like all that kind of stuff, whatever. But as the days have gone on, and obviously as we've waited to see the trade actually happen or not, as the days have went on, you've started to see some Pistons fans slowly, you know, come around to the idea. I think it's because I know in my comment section, I know on Twitter, we've had a lot of Warriors fans reach out to us and say, hey, he may still have something out there. He wasn't really given a lot of run. It wasn't like he had a great chance of developing. Like, this is not a guy who went out there and played a lot and just showed he was trash. This is a guy who just never got a chance to make mistakes and learn from them, go out there and learn the NBA game. He's just very raw. You guys should be really happy to have him. I know you kind of spoke to that, but I'm going to ask you it anyways. Would you say it is more, oh, he was drafted too high, he was never that good, he's a bust, all that kind of stuff? Or do you think that Pistons fans should really look at it as, this dude just wasn't ever given a chance to really play, and he still has that potential, you guys, and you may have something there? And just to give you a little bit more context before you answer the question, Troy Weaver came out, the Pistons GM, 2 days ago, came out and said, we don't have the luxury of getting stars when they're already stars. We have to get them before they turn into one.
Fair.
That's where we're at. And he believes Wiseman is that. So do you agree with Weaver? Do you think that's more the case? Or do you agree with some of the Pistons fans' quick reactions of, he probably wasn't really the number two overall pick to begin with, and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I'll say this, man. I would have a lot more hopes for him than Marvin Bagley, right? Like, when this trade first happened, my immediate reaction, I tweeted this facetiously, but I was like, I guess Detroit's where failed number two picks go to die. But with that said, man, it was a joke. And the thing with Wiseman is this, man. Like, he played in Summer League last year. It was the first time he played in Summer League because the pandemic shut it down for 1 year. I think he was injured for another one. So he played in his first Summer League this year. It was his first training camp. It was his first preseason. And in summer league, he thrived, dude. Like, look at his numbers from those summer league games in Vegas. Like, he put up solid numbers. Even in the preseason, he was putting up great numbers. Even in the opening night against the Lakers for the ring ceremony, he played great that night. I don't know what's going on, man. Steve Kerr, just for some reason, I just wish I could make sense of what he's doing, man. He does not believe in bigs. I don't know why they drafted him in the first place. I guess the point is for Pistons fans, I would just don't give up, man. I wouldn't come into this with cynicism because you can't have judgment on him, period. Like, you can't say he's bad because he hasn't shown that. He's barely played. You could say he's potentially good based off the summer league and preseason numbers because he was putting up numbers, man. And even when he got sent down to the G League in Santa Cruz, even there in limited run, for some reason, they'd only play him like 20 minutes a night. But he would usually put up like 15 points, 10 rebounds, something like that in limited minutes. He can play. I've also talked to former players and then like Hall of Famer Rick Barry and I, we do another show. And so I always pick his brain about athletes and players and with Wiseman. And there were some other people too, former players who came out and strongly endorsed James Wiseman. Clifford Ray, who was there for the 2008 Celtics championship as an assistant coach. And he's a big man coach. He raved to me about James Wiseman, man. When it comes to just his raw talent, there is tremendous potential there. There was a reason he was a number two pick, right? I mean, it's not like anyone mocked the Warriors for going that high with him. That was a weak draft. You have to give it that as well. Like, that was a horrible draft. I don't remember who the Pistons drafted that year, but outside of Haliburton, Tyrese Maxey, Anthony Edwards, there was maybe like one or two other names in that draft, but that's it. It was just a really weak draft, man. So it's hard to really like say that because they picked him a number two, you know, he was a bust. Like, no, we need to see him play. And if you're a Pistons fan, I think there's still hope for him. Like, I would not give up.
All right. I think Pistons fans would love to hear that. We've heard a lot of other things about James Wiseman from Weaver, from a lot of Pistons fans. I know we also heard Draymond Green kind of say some of the same things you were saying on his own podcast, you know, that he just needs to go somewhere where he can get reps and play through some things and be able to actually have that kind of runway. And I don't know, man, as I've watched some more film, I've talked to a lot of Golden State Warriors fans. They've been in my comments talking with you. I think Pistons fans should be pretty excited about the potential that he has if they are willing to give him runtime. And it feels like that Troy Weaver is going to want to do that. So,
yeah, what I don't understand is why you guys traded Sadiq Bey. I never understood why he was on the trade market. I when the trade first came down, it was originally, I think he was originally going to the Warriors. And then all of a sudden we learned more about these other pieces. A lot of Warriors fans wanted Sadiq Bey instead of Gary Payne II. I don't know why you guys traded him. That was weird to me. But James Wiseman, he's not a bust. He's just inconclusive. Like, he needs reps. He needs time. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up making the Warriors regret trading him big time, man. He could be a star.
All right. Well, I will say, if you want to tune into the podcast and listen to the third segment, you'll hear why the Pistons decided to trace Sadiq Bey. I'll tell you guys a little bit later. But Cyrus, thank you for showing up and talking with us, man. Pistons fans, I'm sure you guys are going to love what Cyrus had to say. Really appreciate you, man, coming on, man. Yeah. Make sure you guys go follow him on Twitter at DogSurfRoadShow and also check out Locked On Warriors for sure. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Locked On Cavs host about how the Pistons could possibly make a two big man rotation work or starting lineup work, figuring that they run Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, FanDuel. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from money line to point scores to threes drained. If you want my opinion, I think some bets that you should stay away from, some player props that you should stay away from. If you're a Pistons fan, stay away from Killian Hayes' points. Don't go over. Don't go under. He's a very inconsistent player. I would just stay away from it completely, but I would take the over on Jaden Ivey's assists. He's been doing a really good job of finding open teammates and improving as a playmaker. I would take the over on Jaden Ivey's assists. That's the kind of thing you can do over at FanDuel. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook betting partner of the NBA. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. I hope you guys enjoyed the talk we had with Cyrus in the first segment talking about the addition of James Wiseman. But now we're going to talk with Locked On Cavs host Evan Damerill. And like I told you guys a few podcasts ago, also welcome, Evan. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man.
So we talked about this a few days ago. The Pistons have decided, or it sounds like, according to Mark J. Spears, that the Pistons do intend to start James Wiseman. And I think all of us are just going to assume correctly that he'll be starting next to Jalen Duren, and Jalen Duren will not be getting benched because that would make no sense in hell. But so obviously that led to you guys commenting. Neither of those guys are some great three-point shooters. James Wiseman sounds like he has the potential to shoot threes, but he hasn't really proven that. He hasn't really proven anything. He's only played 60 games. He doesn't have much tape at all to go off of. So a lot of you guys have asked, how can you make that kind of thing work? How's the spacing going to look? All that kind of stuff. You guys are confused. So I thought, you know, I think there's a team in the NBA that starts two big men. Neither one of them a legit stretch big right now. I know Mobley might turn into one. But right now, not necessarily great stretch bigs, but are a really damn good team. And that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, Evan, I think the question is pretty simple. How in the hell do the Cavs make it work? And just to add context to it, the Cavs are number one in the NBA in defensive rating, and then also 10th in the NBA in offensive rating. So how does it work?
I think, to be fair, having Donovan Mitchell helps a lot with that offensive aspect at the end of the day. Like, we were breaking down the Spurs game, and it was a lot of just Donovan Mitchell doing everything. But on the defensive side of the ball, it's just Jared Allen is a traditional rim protector. Like, he's very, very, very good at defending the rim and in the interior, especially without fouling. I think that's a skill that most big men either have or they don't. And you have to kind of just game plan around that if that's your guy or if you're the opponent, obviously. And then you have Evan Mobley, who's just, we say this in the nicest way possible in Locked On Cavs, but is a freak defensively. Like, he is more than willing to defend guys in isolation. He's one of the top isolation defenders in the league overall. He's also very good at complimenting Jared Allen. But like, you notice, like, if you just put Mobley by himself, he sometimes gets overwhelmed with having to do everything at once for Cleveland. And he functions a lot better off ball and maybe just like off paint, if that makes sense to Allen at the end of the day, just because it's a weird coexistence. But on offense, it's also odd. Like, last season, Cleveland started Lauri Markkanen at three just to provide some type of spacing. You waited for Dean Wade to kind of come along, who's an undrafted free agent. Cleveland has kind of developed in-house with the Cleveland Charge, their G League affiliate. And now that Wade is usurped Kevin Love in that role, because Kevin Love was also one of the stretchy bigs as well. But I think defensively, it's the willingness and just kind of like to make teams uncomfortable. And JB Bickerstaff is a coach that is always defensive first. And he really, really strikes home the fact that, at least he calls it, the fetishization of the three-pointer. And he says games are won in the paint at the end of the day. And if you have a lot of big guys who are good at getting to the paint, it helps a lot. But to your point, I think the shooting aspect for Mobley, at least showing the willingness to shoot it in year two so far, has helped a lot too for Jared Allen. Jared Allen has attempted a few three-pointers as of late, and JB Bickerstaff just laughs it off and says that's him being him at that point. But it's an interesting dynamic. Like, when you mentioned Duren and Wiseman playing together, like, I had to look up the counting stats, just because I'll be frank, like, I don't watch the Pistons every single night, nor do I stay up to watch James Wiseman play for the Santa Cruz Warriors when he was with Golden State. So neither of those guys really, like, I'm surprised, like, Isaiah Stewart isn't going to be the starting power forward, and like, you bring Jalen Duren along a little bit more so slowly. But also, the Pistons are in a bit of a different spot than Cleveland was at the end of the day too. Like, no one expected the Cavs to be good last year, and they kind of took the league by storm. And now this year, there's a lot different expectations, where the Pistons are looking to develop their young guys. So maybe that's the approach of it. Maybe there was a guy who shows some shooting chops, but at least Stewart showed some shooting ability. Sure, it's not like on the highest, but like, okay, he's made 31% on 4.1 three-pointers per game this season. That's not terrible, and like, it makes Wiseman function a little bit. Maybe James Wiseman is the shooter that he thinks he can be and that he could be on, in theory at least. But again, there's just not a lot of footage of him just playing at the highest level, because he didn't function with what the Warriors needed from a big man at the end of the day. So I think it's going to be an interesting experiment. But also, it's, and I keep running on here, but it's a lot of its guard play too. Like, I think having Darius Garland just being such a good pick and roll ball handler and a guy who provides you that spacing, and then adding Donovan Mitchell to that helps a lot too. And it's just, it's tricky, but you can make it work. And it makes sense why Detroit's doing this, because you look at teams like Toronto who plays bigger. You have Cleveland that plays bigger. Boston is a team that plays bigger at times too. Like, that is kind of now the way the NBA is trending, where, yeah, it's 3-point heavy, but you got guys who are just freaks of nature that are 7-footers that can do a little bit of everything. And maybe Detroit can get that at some point with between Wiseman, Dern, even Isaiah Stewart.
So real quick, I have another question, but real quick, just to give you context for why the Pistons are choosing Dern. Dern has been, he's been starting the last 25 games, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he, over the last 24 games, he's averaging 11.5 rebounds, 1.1 blocks, 1.6 steals, shooting close to 69% from the field. He's been really, really good for the Pistons. And he's showcasing this. And this is part of the thing. I heard you mention it a little bit, but his passing ability is something that he continues to flash over and over and over again. So that's something that makes some fans feel like they can work. The question I have, though, and this is another thing you mentioned, I just wanted to see, is it really just boils down to this? And I'm happy that you mentioned it. Is it really just because Donovan Mitchell is a freaking monster? Darius Garland is a freaking monster. So those guys, like, they don't really need as much space. They can make it work with whatever space. Because there was, like, I know I'm pretty young. I don't think you're too old. But, like,
ouch.
There was a time where the NBA was played without five shooters. There was a time where there was three guys on the court that just couldn't shoot. So it can work. But I guess my question to you is, does it really just boil down to the fact that you guys have two legitimate stars at the guard play? Do you think you'd be able to work if you don't have just legitimate stars on the guard positions?
Well, for Detroit, to be fair to them, they do have a legitimate star in Cade Cunningham. It's just he's out for the year, so you can't like see how this functions with him out there as well. But like the Jalen Duren's pet playmaking, like, that's an interesting development. If you're Detroit, and again, a team that's not like aspiring to make the playoffs, like, yeah, let him explore that. Let him learn from that. Because I think that's a little bit of the other wrinkle too, is Evan Mobley has some playmaking chops where, like, they run set plays where he's at the top of the elbow and, like, they'll have guys work off ball, whether it's Mitchell, Garland, Okoro, Wade, Osman, you name it. Like, they just surround him with shooting, or they surround him with guys who are willing to streak to the basket and let defenses collapse on Mobley because you have to respect him. And I think, yeah, a lot of it is the dynamic guard play, but I think it's also coaches like JV Bickerstaff being comfortable with being uncomfortable at times and trying something that's weird. Like, oh my gosh, this is a really long time ago, but like Larry Nance Jr. was the starting three for a while for Cleveland. We had him on the show and they rolled that set out with like him, Kevin Love, and Andre Drummond sharing the floor together. And he said the Heat didn't know what we were doing. And to be frank, we didn't know what we were doing. And I think that's kind of the beauty of the game at times, is especially with like a young team like Detroit. Like I agree, like Jalen Duren's been a stud for them. Like I love that pickup for the Detroit when they got him. And I was surprised when they got Wiseman, because I'm just like, huh, that kind of stunts Jalen Duren's development a little bit. But we'll see how it unfolds. But I think, yeah, a lot of it is guard play, and it's a shame because Cade can't play with these guys, because I think it would make life a lot easier just for every big guy involved on Detroit's roster if Cade was out there. But maybe you get a little bit more just from what guards you do have available and what guard play you do have. And again, like, Detroit isn't aspiring to make the playoffs. Like, they're focused on the draft and just kind of rebuilding and retooling around like this really impressive young nucleus they've put together so far. And now it's just maybe figuring out like what kind of talents does Jalen Duren have. Like again, that playmaking stuff is really exciting. And like, if you can make that functional, like where James Wiseman is strictly just like an interior big man, and like you have Duren act as a bit of a facilitator, and you just kind of do like his turn, my turn on the interior at times, like that's a way to make it work a little bit. But a lot of it is spacing, and I think a lot of it's guard play. And it'll be interesting to watch. Like, after we've had this conversation, like, it's going to be something I have bookmarked just to see, like, how does this function? Because, again, I had a lot of questions. Like, I understand why Detroit does it. Like, you get a guy who's a former top five pick who has that pedigree, and you can roll the dice with it. But I am morbidly curious to see how it just functions at the end of the day for the Pistons.
So, before we wrap up, you said something that I sure – As soon as you said, I'm sure a lot of Pistons fans probably rolled their eyes and was like, oh, well, we're screwed. And it was a coach that's comfortable getting uncomfortable. So last question I'll ask you is this. Would you say that in order to make something like this work, your coach would have to be, I don't know, creative offensively?
Well, to be frank, JV Bickerstaff has a pretty vanilla offense. He's a defensive first coach. And
okay.
I think a lot of it is the guard play, like Darius Garland going nuclear last year, and Evan Mobley just being so good right out the gates defensively made this so functional, and Jared Allen just being so consistent, like just made something work for the Cavs. But if you have an identity, which Cleveland's is defense, it's protecting the rim, like they cheer and applaud one another when refs call the defensive 3 second stuff, because they're like, okay, they respect us enough that we're protecting the paint too hard, or I don't know, it's their thing, not mine. But again, it's a lot of it's guard play. I think adding Donovan Mitchell just gave the Cavs 8 to 10 three-pointers a night that they didn't have last season, and that just opens up the floor so much more. And I don't know, now we'll see how Dwayne Casey feels being uncomfortable. I'm curious to see what happens there, and I wonder if the Pistons move on from him and look at another coach after this season just to kind of keep developing the squad. But at the end of the day, like your best player is Cade Cunningham, and unfortunately he's not out there right now, so now you kind of have to make do with what you have, and maybe you find some building blocks through like this two big set that you're running here, or these two big lineups you're running now, to maybe say like, okay, we have something that's functional. Now we work Cade back into this, and then we see what we have next year.
All right. Well, sounds like that the Pistons, if they want to make this work as great as they possibly can, they're going to need some good guard play. So that means we're going to be hoping to see in continued improvement from Jaden Ivey, and hopefully Killian Hayes, after playing well for a good stretch there, snaps out of this rough stretch that he's in, and those two guys can start to play well, because it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. They definitely, I wouldn't be shocked if they decided to start Alec Burks with this lineup to give some kind, to give even more spacing and bring Killian Hayes off the bench. But thank you, Evan, man, for Jordan. It's look, going against Cleveland, I think, is what caused them to do this, because every time we go against Cleveland, it looks like you guys are playing with preschoolers against us. It's like you guys just, it's just like domination. It's just too easy. And it almost feels like the Cavs toy with the Pistons. It's sad. So they need some size to compete with Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Okoro, all those, all the big wings that you guys got. I mean, really just Allen and Mobley. Those two guys are freaking crazy, man. But
not just those two, even Giannis, you have, Miles Turner in Indiana, like, right. I don't know what the heck Chicago is going to do, but at least for now they have Pat Williams and Nikola Vucevic. Like, there's size across the Central Division, and if you want to bang with the big boys, and I don't know, it's interesting that like, the Cavs have beaten the Pistons twice now without Mitchell and Garland, and it's been two kind of blowout games in that sense. So maybe Casey is taking a page out of Cleveland's book, or maybe he's just frustrated with them getting shredded in the interior, and hey, two big guys that are have potential at least to defend the rim, like that's a good place to be.
All right, well, appreciate you, Evan, coming on, giving us all this insight of what it's like to be covering a team that has two big men starting in their lineup. Appreciate you. You guys can go follow him on Twitter, at amnotevan. Make sure you guys check out Locked On Cavs to get even more insight about all of that. And when we come back, I want to talk with you guys about why the Pistons made the decision to move on from Sadiq Bey. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, LinkedIn Jobs. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know that success in 2023 all depends on the team members you surround yourself with. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with the people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with targeting tools. They go beyond resume data by using insights from your job posts, company, and their 875 million member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates available. Identify the most qualified candidates on LinkedIn Jobs and connect with them fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications all on one platform. And what's a better way to start your year off in 2023 by finding the most perfect possible candidate for your small business? That's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates you want to talk to faster and easier. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. So I hope you guys enjoyed the insight we got from Locked On Warriors host and Locked On Cavs host. Had a lot of fun recording with both of those guys. I feel like we learned a lot about James Wiseman and about what would need to be, you know, what would have to happen if the Pistons start two bigs who aren't necessarily spacers on the floor. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. There's been so much that's happened over the past week, over the past weekend, that it was hard for me to fit everything I wanted to talk about in the first podcast of the week, in the initial reaction podcast. So we haven't even got to really talk about, I don't feel like, we talked about it a little bit, but we haven't really got to talk about why the Pistons decided to move on from Sadiq Bey. And I know the podcast already is running a little bit long here because we had two guests. So I don't want to take too long with this, but I did want to talk about this. I hadn't gotten around to it. So right when the Pistons made this trade, right after I recorded the reaction podcast, James Edwards III, Detroit Pistons beat writer of The Athletic, came out with an article. And it wasn't very nice to Sadiq Bey. So I want to read you guys this, and then I'll give my thoughts on why the Pistons decided to move Sadiq Bey after. But I want to read this first. So first thing I want to read is this, quote, "Bey's value around the league wasn't very high to begin with. Multiple league executives whose team inquired about Bey told The Athletic in recent weeks that Detroit's asking price for Bey was too high leading up to the deadline when factoring in his inconsistencies on offense and defensive deficiencies." And he also, James went on to say that, quote, "None who spoke to The Athletic were willing to give up anything of significance to land Bey." The last thing I want to point out from this article before I give my thoughts is this right here, which I thought was incredibly telling that the front office felt this way and gave basically permission to say this and write this. This was pretty telling. So it's a long paragraph. I do encourage you guys to buy an Athletic subscription so you guys can see everything James said in this and you guys continue to get some of his work. He does some great stuff over at The Athletic. But last thing I want to read out is James said, quote, "On the floor, Bey's style of play was starting to wear on some in Detroit's organization. He did have the ability to score in bunches and did so often, but his shot selection and at times tunnel vision went against what the team wanted to see from him as a player. The Pistons wanted Bey to do more by doing less. Bey was interested in expanding his game. Bey's most efficient season came his rookie year when he was primarily a catch-and-shoot weapon. Since then, when he's dabbled in self-creation more, his efficiency has dropped significantly. Bey hasn't had an effective field goal percentage greater than 50 since his rookie year." So, now I want to give my thoughts on this. Basically, what was just read and what James said in this article, and there's plenty of other stuff he said. They go on to talk about Isaiah Livers. They talk about James Wiseman. So, again, buy the Athletic subscription and read that. I really encourage it. It's a good subscription to have. But what James said in this article that the front office or people within the organization felt like is what I've been telling you guys for a long time about Sadiq Bey. Does Sadiq Bey have talent? Yes. But Sadiq Bey had very clear negatives that didn't just hurt him, but hurt others. See, people like to point out that, you know, Sadiq Bey wasn't the most efficient guy, but neither is Isaiah Stewart. Neither is Killian Hayes. Well, neither of those guys play, and I feel like now that he's gone, we can be honest about this, a selfish way of playing basketball. Sadiq Bey was trying to dabble in self-creation. He wasn't good at it. And oftentimes, almost every time, when he got the ball and he decided he was going to try to do something, it never ended in a pass. He never looked a pass. It oftentimes was tunnel vision. He took up a bad shot. And it hurt the offense. And I think the biggest or the most, you know, remembered play when he did that was when he ignored Jalen Duren on the drop-off pass against Dallas, and the Pistons ended up losing that game late. So I think Sadiq Bey's, the way he was playing, it wasn't just the fact that he was ineffective offensively. It was the way he was going about being ineffective offensively that was really rubbing people the wrong way in the coaching staff and the front office, apparently. And it was something that I had been talking about a lot on this podcast for the past 2 years. That's one. Two, his defensive issues. You cannot be a wing in this league, be ineffective offensively, and have concerns about the way you play within an offense while also being a bad defender. It's not going to happen. In this league, when you have a bunch of 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys running around that are versatile 1-5 defensively and can do all kinds of different things offensively, you cannot be one of those things. And Sadiq Bey was not a good defender. He hadn't been a good defender. So he struggled playing defense. He struggled buying into a role. Offensively, also this piece, it says in here that Sadiq basically says, Sadiq Bey was the one who wanted to expand his game. It wasn't the front office's idea. It wasn't the training, the coaching staff's idea. It was Sadiq Bey who wanted to add more to his game, which is fine at first, but it hadn't worked for 2 years. So, look, if the front office was done with the way he was trying to play, did not like his play style, the fact that it was hurting the team, the fact he wasn't able to play defense, and then a guy comes available that they're very high on, it makes complete sense for them to move to make that trade. Now, this is what I'll say about Sadiq Bey, and this will probably be the last time we mention Sadiq Bey. He's no longer a Piston. I don't want to spend too much time on it. This will be the last thing I say about him. Will Sadiq Bey go on to be a successful player somewhere else? Probably. He probably will, but that won't have any bearings about how I feel about this trade. Sadiq Bey wasn't going to – the Pistons weren't going to be able to get Sadiq Bey to just be a catch-and-shoot player on a team that sucks. The team's not good. They're losing a lot. When you're a tanking team, when you're a, let's not say tanking, but a losing team. Like Dwayne Casey talked about this a few weeks ago. When you're on a losing team like this, guys start doing other stuff. They start dabbling in stuff. No guy really has a specified role. When you're on a contender, when you're on a team that's trying to win, if you don't buy into your role, you're going to be on the bench. You'll sit. So now that he's in Atlanta where they're trying to win, do I believe they're going to tell Sadiq Bey, hey, you're not going to get to do this ISO stuff. We want you to be a catch-and-shoot player and play defense as best you can. Do I think he'll have to buy into that? I do think he'll have to buy into that. And if he does buy into that, I can see a future where he can be a good player in this league. Remember, his rookie year, I said he could be a 10-year player as a starter if he buys into that stuff. The problem was he wasn't buying into that the last 2 years for the Pistons, and it probably wasn't going to happen anytime soon because the Pistons probably won't be big-time winners anytime soon. It's much easier to get a guy to buy into a role and tell him basically play this role you won't play when you're a contender, when you're a team trying to compete. What the Atlanta Hawks are. So I won't be shocked if Sadiq Bey plays well for the Atlanta Hawks. I hope he does. But that doesn't have any bearings on why the Pistons made this trade. It won't make the Pistons regret doing this trade, especially if Wiseman turns out to be good. So those are my thoughts on why the Pistons got rid of Sadiq Bey. I think it makes complete sense. And I don't think if you can, and again, I advise all of you guys to read this article completely. I don't see how if someone can read this article, then look at the way Sadiq Bey was playing, put those two things together, how you can come away saying the Pistons shouldn't have traded Sadiq Bey. You need to read this article. I'm telling you, I'll say it one more time. I don't see how you can come away reading this and think the Pistons shouldn't have moved Sadiq Bey. I don't see how you can say that. So those are my thoughts on it. I do wish Sadiq Bey the best in Atlanta. And like I said, I do think he'll become a good player if he buys into a role and stops trying to do things he can't do. And hopefully that team, since they're trying to win, they can get him to buy into that. So he'll have to be a better defender, though, and hopefully he can do that. But wish him the best. That's all I've got for you guys today, man. Let me know what you guys think about everything we talked about on today's podcast in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kukahill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button to the YouTube channel. Leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. And until next time, I'll see you guys later. Stay safe. Go Pistons. Peace out.